crazy talk.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 9 of Crazy Talk. In this episode, we don't have Medina and we don't have Frank. We got me and Alex. We got less Medina for you today. But we have three other guests with us. We got Legacy Legend, Mark's son, with us on the phone. How's it going, Mark?
What's going on, guys? I think you make it worse every time you introduce me.
I think soon you'll be known as the Legacy God and be known as the favorite to win GP Providence.
Right. I mean, the Legacy God that slipped out of Charlotte like a champion.
Can't wait to teach his love for his Asian brother.
We got Bryce.
Hey, what's up?
How's it going, Bryce? Someone I met on Twitter, but one of the contributors to Man Deprived, and also a good friend of John Medina and Mark's son, right, Bryce?
Yeah, I met Mark once, but he was pretty cool.
And we also got my friend, my dear friend who does Dirtling Around, Dave Lee, who's just going to be here hanging out, chilling with us, because he's not a regular Legacy player, right, Dave?
Yeah, I play Legacy once in a while, but not as much as other formats. But I do love the format, though.
Okay, but, you know, definitely love to have you here. So with Bryce on as our new guest here, a new Legacy regular, we're going to ask you what we ask every guest that come on, which is the five. So are you ready, Bryce?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Question one, how did you get into Legacy?
Well, I live in the Northeast, so it's pretty much the main format around here.
And so, like, more so than Standard?
I mean, I used to play, like, other card games when I was in middle school and stuff, and then they all died. So I played Magic, and Legacy was the first real format. Eventually, I just played Standard because it was cheaper, but then I just got back into Legacy.
Oh. Question two, what's your favorite Magic card and why?
It probably Remand from Ravnica. It's a blue one instant. You can counter any spell, and then it goes back to their hand, and you draw a card. I don't know. I started taking Magic seriously, especially like limited drafting and all that around Ravnica, and it was just one of my favorite cards in the set to play in Constructed.
Okay. That Remand was one of the more annoying counter spells to play against in my memory, but a card that I love to play.
Me too. I love remanding my own spells when they countered them. That way, like, you get your spell back, you draw a card, and their card was basically nullified instead of being even.
It was a sick card.
It was. Oh.
Question three. What would you like to be known for in the Magic community? And why should we care? And in Mark Sun's case, he would like to be known as a legendary god in Legacy. But what do you want to be known for, Bryce?
I actually have absolutely no idea about that. I don't know. I haven't really tried working on my personal brand as far as Magic is concerned.
You're not a Medina. You're definitely not a Medina.
Not yet.
Question four, you're going to get into a bar fight, and you can pick one member of the Magic community to get your back. Who's your pack one, pick one?
I think everyone so far has picked Jerry T, so I don't know. Do I, like, have to pick him?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. I met Jerry T, and I've seen, like, a lot of bigger, stronger-looking guys in my time. I don't know. Like, nothing against Jerry, of course, but, you know. I
have a decent answer. My friend Medina also knows him. Well, our friends Eugene and Maitland. But Maitland has had to, like, pick up our car before, like, physically lift the car up and move it, like, push it when we were stuck. So I think he would not be a terrible person to have in a fight. So shout out to Maitland, I guess.
Question five, Alex. Give it a go.
Question five. What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
I don't know. This podcast? It's pretty crazy, right?
Wow, good answer.
Though you pretty said the word answer. Incorrectly. Say it again.
Oh, it's crazy.
Okay,
hopefully,
so
hopefully you don't fail that bad at magic.
One of the first topics I want to get into, and we're going to ask Mark or Dave first because Mark's on the phone there. Before getting to the legacy tidbit, I thought one of the interesting things that my good friend Jerry Thompson has stirred up Slate's, I wouldn't say controversy, but he's been scooping a lot of people in. And I know some Twitter followers did not like it. I mean, last week, 2 weeks ago by now, SCG Boston, he beat me and then he scooped AJ into the top eight. This week again, I believe he scooped AJ to the top eight of the standard portion and perhaps in the legacy or something. And then someone scooped to AJ in the final, so it wasn't even played. And I know a lot of Twitter followers had something to say, like wanted to see, like, please stop scooping. So I'll just offer my quick opinion before you guys, because I've thought about this. Like, I don't really mind. I mean, it's part of, I'm not going to hate these guys for doing it. I love these guys. I don't really have too much of opinion. I mean, it's part of the rules. They can do it, and it benefits guys like AJ or whoever Jerry was trying to scoop, because he already had level 8, and he was trying to get his friends into level 8. And other people have suggested maybe there should be a system where, you know, there's incentive for you to keep wanting to play. So, Mark, Dave, if you have any opinions at all, if not, you know, pass it along.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll start, Dave. Is that cool?
That's cool, yeah.
Alright, well, yeah, first of all, like, I kind of agree with you, KYZ here. I don't have any serious problems personally with the guys and what they're doing right now. Obviously, you know, they're in the grind. They've been going to all these tournaments, and everybody who is currently level 8, they've worked really hard to get to where they are. So, you know, and then for the people who are scooping them in, like, I know Kyle Miller, I think, was the guy in the finals playing junk. I was already driving home at this point, but I heard about it on the phone. So, but yeah, you know, like, but I heard him drive back, and I was like, you know, that makes sense. You know, Kyle, he's not a regular guy that's on the circuit or anything, and he doesn't really stand to gain a whole lot. You know, if he's looking to just make an invitational, then, you know, he's already got it in his hands. So there's no extra gain from getting 20 points compared to whatever you get in the top eight. So I think it makes sense. So I don't really have any problems with it. About the way to govern this kind of activity, I don't think there's going to be any set way to govern it, because people are always going to be able to get around it, and, you know, you're never going to be like, hey, you scooped. So you can't be like, hey, you got to keep going up the levels. I think I made a point to somebody that the subsidy system as it is, I don't think they expected that they would have this many level eights at this point in the season. So I think this was supposed to be this unattainable thing that, you know, it was really hard to get to. And now they're looking at four guys that are going to get four of each set.
Someone like in the back is thinking, fuck no. I think the main issue people had was that they didn't, like AJ said that they played off camera and he won, but I think people were let down, people who were watching SCG Live who wanted to see the finals, and they're just like, you know, insta scooped, like, what the fuck, you know.
I kind of wanted to watch only because I really liked AJ's deck.
And I personally love to see Jerry Thompson play, and like, he's scooping people in left and right. I'm like, what? Yeah. I want to see him in the top eight again. Dave, any opinions, or would you say you agree with us?
In general, I would agree with you guys. Like, I can see people being disappointed when they expect to see a match and it doesn't play out. But at the same time, I'm a bit less of a competitive guy, so I'm kind of on, from an outside perspective, I'm looking in. But I guess there's that kind of that etiquette, I guess, right? Where I think it was in the last SCG Open, the standard portion, I think Alex Bertoncini was in his last round, and he needed to win in order to reach level 8, I think, and he was scooped in as well. So, I don't know. I personally don't have a problem with it, but, yeah, I think it's okay.
Speaking of Bertoncini, Dave, in the legacy portion, Jerry actually said that he would scoop to him, offered to scoop to him, and Alex actually declined the offer and said, you know, and then Jerry's like, okay, since you declined, if I beat you, I'm going to beat you. And Jerry did, in fact, end up beating him. So I thought it was interesting for Alex to do that, to not accept a scoopage from Jerry. Alex, any final opinions on this little matter?
Well, I again also, you know, echoing your sentiments, guys, is I have no problem with that scooping. Like, I think, you know, you're going there, you're playing a tournament, and he really has very little to gain at that point, whereas his friends do. So, I mean, that's fine, I think. Like, I understand some people could be annoyed that, you know, they get beaten by Jerry earlier in rounds, and then he scoops with someone else. Like, it happened to you, KYT, right?
But, right.
And, like, they feel that, you know, they didn't get the chance because they had to play Jerry T, whereas these other guys, you know, just got to be scooped by him. But, I mean, they still had to get to that point in the tournament where they could get there. They're just getting one win.
Mark brought up an interesting point. I do wonder if they thought there were going to be this many level 8s.
Definitely not.
This early? Does the season reset or something? Because, like, I heard they really needed to get level 8, or is it just because of the release of New Phyrexia?
Yeah, well, I think they wanted to get level 8 before New Phyrexia comes out.
Okay. But they get free sets from this point forward. Okay.
I think it's once the second half of the season starts or whatever, your points actually reset, but you keep your previous level. So, like, all the level 8s will go down to 0s, but they keep all their 8 privileges.
Man, that's insane. We'll see how it plays out. So, of course, this past weekend, we had Star City Games Charlotte. Bryce, you didn't get a chance to go, did you? Or?
No, I played in a GPT, though.
Okay, so we'll start with Mark, since he's our lovely Asian man on the phone with us. So, Mark, what did you play? How'd you do?
Well, I played Enchantress, and, I got a whopping 1-3 drop for the weekend to show for my efforts. Kind of, it was pretty depressing. I think I was pretty dark when I got home. I think I some things I didn't want to say on Twitter, and just, you know, I felt generally disappointed because, you know, there's a lot of hype, going into this tournament, and, I was really confident. Like, I was watching, Boston coverage. I was looking at top 8. I was looking at, you know, the metagame breakdown for March, and I was like, God, I have this in the bag because Enchantress is going to rock this format. And, you know, and I wound up, I just remember, like, I knew things were going to go wrong because I sat down for my first match, and it was, you know, this was a really nice guy playing Death and Taxes. And I don't like the match at all because they have a card that, you know, they have a Shroud and Ports, they have Aether Swamp Cannonist, they have an Enlightened Tutor sideboard that I don't know what's going to be in there, but so I sit down for my first match. I'm 0-5 on the play, and I have one land, and I'm thinking, God damn it, what is going on? So, and it's funny because the day before I had you know, I've been playing some casual games and you know, just testing in general people who are getting ready to play for Sunday, and, like, you know, it was smooth sailing the entire time. So you know, and I just couldn't hold back the feeling of, like, after the first round, I lost. Game one, you know, it's the Mold of Five, and game two, he brought in Sword of Feast and Famine, he brought in Cataclysm, he had, he Enlightened Tutored for Serenity and Aura of Silence. I was like, Jesus, like, it was just such a miserable match, like, and I got done, and I was like, God, did that just happen? Like, I wasn't even sure what happened right there, so, yeah, it was pretty bad.
You mentioned hype, and I think, nobody else other than this show hyped you a lot to do.
It was just like in my play group and everything. Like, we were really excited to go to another event because we didn't think we originally weren't planning to travel to another one. But you know, like, as soon as I mentioned, hey, this is the metagame's kind of calmed down a little bit. There's not as much crazy combo decks, you know, making top 8, and, you know, it's kind of safe to play something non-blue again. Everybody was pretty excited. So.
And we were excited for you. To hopefully see you up there, and hopefully nobody, the people that beat you didn't recognize you, and felt
he was wearing sunglasses.
I played Lewis Lapkin in the third round. He's a real nice guy, but you know, that was also a match where I mulled a 5 on a play, and you know, it's like, if there was ever a worse time to mull a 5 on a play, it's against Lewis Lapkin. Like, he had a pretty knowledgeable idea of the matchup. So, like, he spot the button sort of piece of family against me, which is, like, it's a card that I originally was like, oh, this would be fine. Like, I'm not worried about this card. And then I realized if I didn't have any lock pieces in play, game, man. Like, he hit me twice with the Sword of Feast of Famine, and I was done. Like, I had no way to regain card advantage at all. And that's a card that I didn't factor in, because I didn't... Maybe I was looking at a list that was more set for pre-Mirrodin Besieged, but, Sword of Feast of Famine is catching on to Legacy, I guess.
So I think we've briefly touched on Enchantress before in the cast, but would you like to elaborate on what the deck tries to do?
Sure. Well, if you're me, you struggle like a fish out of water, and then you eventually die. But for the pilots that can get the good draws and get the whole deck going. Basically, your idea is to resolve an Enchantress effect. So there's two cards from Urza's Saga, Argarthian Enchantress and Enchantress's Presence from Onslaught, which is kind of an homage to the original card. But the idea is to generate card advantage behind it using these effects, and kind of bury your opponent in card advantage as well as set up your lock piece. So your major lock piece in this deck is Solitary Confinement. So like by itself in a vacuum, it looks like a pretty poor card, because you're going to be losing cards your upkeep, you're going to be skipping your draw step. If you don't discard a card, you have to sacrifice it. But under multiple Enchantress effects, you can sustain it over time. So a lot of cards were printed that kind of favor this kind of strategy. So you have Sterling Groves to give your other enchantment Shroud. If you have two Sterling Groves in play, everything you have is Shroud. You have Replenish so that you can undo what your opponents have done to remove your permanents. And, you get to play with a lot of powerful cards. You get to play with Moat, for example. You get to play with cards that you didn't really think could see Legacy play, like Sigil of Genti Throne. But, overall, it's a really powerful deck. It has a very strong late game. It doesn't have a very strong early game, which is probably one of the issues that I wanted to get around by playing Chromox and Accelerants, but didn't get there this time.
So what do you think, what were the good and bad matchups quickly for this deck, Mark?
I had written in my blog about the good and bad matchups. The good matchups are just the decks that are unprepared for it. Like, every deck, I believe, can beat Enchantress if it wanted to with a sideboard, but it's such a small part of the metagame that no one's going to be totally prepared for it. So the good matchups, like Goblins, like Merfolk, even a lot of control decks that are in this format, even with counterbalance-based decks, I can still see myself having a favorable matchup against them. So I listed these three decks because they were the most popular, or some of the most popular decks that were in the month of March. In fact, if you look at Glenn Jones's metagame breakdown for the month of March, Merfolk is pushing, it's the only archetype that pushes 10% plus. So if you go into a start for the event, if you want to prepare for it, your deck has to be able to handle Merfolk. But the bad matchups, though, it depends on, the pilot and depends on the deck. But I said at Team America, it was a pretty bad matchup. They have removal, they have counters, they have discard, all things that are really good against your deck. They don't play a ton of creature spot removal, so there's not a lot of dead cards against you. Junk, depending on the build, I was really confident about Junk because the previous week, the guy at the top two and lost to Burton Chi in the finals, his deck didn't have any Vindicates of them, which is the card that I'm most scared of. He was also playing only two Pernicious Deed in the sideboard, so basically it means that if I had played his particular model of Junk, I would have had a very non-interactive matchup where I could have set up a lock really fast.
Any questions, Alex?
Would you recommend this deck, even though it didn't work well for you, for other people?
I definitely recommend Enchantress. I think that I think it is mulliganed and had some bad luck. Like, I don't want to make the whole weekend, a bad beat story, but in general, if you're not mulliganing nine times in nine games, you should have pretty favorable hands. One of the cards that I wasn't really that sold on going into the weekend was Chromox. You can power out a first turn Enchantress, but I wasn't that comfortable, because the chance that you might be on the draw and the chance that you're going against an unknown opponent, you don't want to just, quote unquote blow your load on the first Argarthian Enchantress. I generally play a lot more conservative when I'm piloting this kind of deck, but the list that I've played, I don't think it's optimal. You can change a lot of the silver bullet spots to change to fit to your metagame, but I think in general it's a pretty good model.
So when would you think it's a bad time to play Enchantress?
Enchantress decks, I think they were a strong metagame choice for a really long time, and then decks like Reanimator popped up. A lot of the tier 2 matchups are the ones that you don't want to face. Like, Reanimator is a really bad matchup because Iona on white just crushes you. You don't want to play against, like, the show-and-tell decks. There's a lot of live outs. I try to include at least three live outs, which are Humility in the sideboard, Caracas in the main, and Oblivioning in the main to Emrakul. But Emrakul is really, really bad for you because even with Solitaire Confinement Lock, they can still attack. And if they're attacking, you're still sacrificing permanence. So you're gonna, your board position is going to just go away in two turns. But, you know, like the Show and Tell sneak attack decks are pretty bad. Can't really think of a really bad one. I guess the decks that can bring in extra strong cannons and apply pressure very quickly, those are going to be not too great at matchups.
But you feel favorable against most combo decks?
Well, the sideboard has four Leyline of Sanctity, and it has another Enlightened Tutor and two Rune Halo in the sideboard. So against combo, depending on what you're going to be playing against, if I'm playing against straight-up Ad Nauseam Tendrils, I think the matchup's pretty good because I can, if I'm on the Leyline, I can use it. They generally don't have the turn one kill, so I have access to Enlightened Tutor to find a quick Rune Halo. Or if I have Leyline in play, I can Enlightened Tutor for Sterling Grove to protect it. If you get to the point where you have two Sterling Groves in play with Leyline, it's kind of game over at that point. But I would rank Tess, the five color, the Epic Storm deck. That might be a slightly or even a worse matchup because they have access to Empty the Warrens and they generally have a lot more paths to victory in their hand. I don't know if I think Bryce is a pretty experienced Storm pilot. I don't know if you can comment on this.
It's not like the best, but you can win it.
Yeah. But and then against High Tide, we were testing the matchup, and I felt pretty comfortable. High Tide usually requires the fundamental turn for High Tide is about three or four. So in the sideboard, we have Carpet of Flowers to advance our own game state, Clay Lines, Rune Halos, a lot of ways to proactively protect ourselves against cards like Brain Freeze and Lusan Zenith. So I think the three main combo decks, Storm based, anyways, we have I think have a pretty good matchup against.
But doesn't High Tide, when it goes off, like, can't it just bounce all your stuff?
Yeah, but the other thing is you have access to Sterling Groves, which changes that matchup completely. Like, I was never really big on permanent base hate against High Tide, but until I realized that in the Hatfield list, the stock list that, from Atlanta and the people who are generally playing, there's no way to bounce multiple permanents. There's no untargeted bounce. So if you manage to get Grove in play, it's another way that they have to get around before they win, and that just buys you more time with Carpet of Flowers to throw out more permanents. Like post board, we had our lock pieces were three Solitary Confinement, four Leyline of Sanctity, four Rune Halo, four Sterling Grove. So there's a really good chance that you're going to be able to start locking yourself in before they get a chance to develop the board position.
All right. Well, thanks for the details on the deck. So you definitely recommend this deck to other people.
Yeah, just don't mulligan a lot. That's
I think that's pretty good advice with most decks, right? Other than maybe Dredge.
Yeah, I mentioned the one thing that, like, on the drive home, I had a lot of time to reflect on my weekend, and I really wanted to find out, what was the real problem? What was the main thing that was keeping me from winning matches? And a lot of it came down to I just couldn't find an Enchantress Select in my opener hand. That was the big problem. The deck doesn't really get itself going without Enchantress Effect. I mean, you can maybe struggle for a little bit, but there's a lot of things that drawing those extra cards are going to lead to. Like, you're going to get card selectivity. You're going to have the ability to sustain the locks with the card advantage. But if you don't have any of that, you just can't. It's like a really bad EDH deck. You're just going to keep drawing singletons. You have no idea what's going on. So, I don't think that's my particular style. I think I picked it because I've played it before.
Whoa.
We just lost Mark's son.
At least he died happy. Oh.
We're gonna try to call him again and see what happens.
The suspense is killing me. Ta-dum, ta-dum, ta-dum.
Hello?
What happened, Mark?
I think we hit 30 minutes and the call just dropped. Yeah, sorry about that one.
So you were talking about how it was just a bad EDH deck?
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, without the draw engine in the deck, it really becomes... All the singletons really start to pile up, and it starts becoming a nightmare much, much faster. But, I think it was just not my style of deck, so I'm looking forward to... playing something blue again. Like I usually play Bant. I'm not a fan of like the Stoneforge Bant decks, but I usually play the Bant Temple decks. But that's something that I might look into as the new Fire Exit comes out.
So GP Providence, no chance you're playing Enchantress.
There is no way. I mean, it's definitely gonna be something with Mental Misstep. I mean, that card is really, really good. No Enchantress is fine.
I thought you were going to set yourself up for one of us to insult you when you said on the drive home you were thinking about what the real problem of the...
it's true, right? Like, on the way home, I was a combination of, like, you know, I was happy because my friend Dave Nolan made top 8, and but at the same time, I was, like, you know, I kept, like, replaying all the matches that had played out, and I was like, God, I couldn't really do anything, like... You know, the only deck that I beat, like, I was too embarrassed to even mention the article. Like, I was just, like, the only deck that I beat was some guy, really nice guy, probably been playing for a long time. His DTI number was, like, you know, a whole magnitude smaller than mine. So, like, I knew he'd been playing for a while. He was playing, like, Infect Stompy or something, like, and I just felt so bad because, like, I could find my, like, those are the games where I could find myself, like, turn two, and I was like, sorry, like, you can't do any damage to me. I just can't, you can't do anything here. But, I just felt so bad because, I mean, that was the only match where things went right.
Well, even superstars have their off days, I doubt. But you sounded pretty, I have to admire your passion. You sound like you really, really want to redeem yourself at GP Providence. You sound like you really beat yourself up over your failure, I guess, at Charlotte.
Yeah, definitely. I haven't really done this bad at an SCG Open in a while, and I started feeling the mental stress of like of finding that match that's not in your favor. But I have a lot of conviction when I play, and I thought I had this weekend figured out, and you know, it's just going back to the drawing board for another shot. But I'll probably go to Louisville to kind of warm up, because I think a lot of things are going to shake up in these next two weeks when New Fire Exit comes up.
Sounds good. We're going to move to Bryce. How's it going, Bryce?
Pretty good.
So you played at Boston, and you also recently played a GPT, I hear.
Yeah.
Did you play the same deck?
No, but I played, like, 12 snow-covered islands in both of them.
So want to give us a quick rundown on what you've been playing and what you will plan to play at Providence?
Yeah. Usually... when Counterbalance was good, I just played Counterbalance forever. But recently I've been playing all the different like blue tempo-ish decks with Tarmogoyf. So either like Bant or the Rug Colored or Team America for a little while. For Boston, I decided to sleeve up Merfolk because I wanted to give it some real testing in a real tournament before Misstep came out, so that I was a little more comfortable with the deck. And then at the GPT, I played High Tide just because it would be like the last tournament where I could ever play the deck in a reasonable way.
So why snow-covered islands?
Because they're covered in snow.
I don't think you would choose snow-covered islands if you lived up here in Montreal. It's pretty cold.
No, I live in New England. It's fairly cold here.
So you just played High Tide just to get that one last...
Yeah, I also just assumed that there would be a bunch of joke decks at the local GPT, because there were two GPTs happening. One of them was at a store where there are not terrible players, and one was at a store where there are terrible players. So I went to the one where there are only terrible players, expecting terrible players, but all the good players went to the store where there's bad players. So it was everyone was metagaming against each other, really.
Not again. That brings the count to, like, I don't know.
50 billion. So, Bryce, do you prefer, like, these aggro disruption decks, or do you prefer combo decks?
I don't know. I feel pretty comfortable playing either. Right now, I would rather be attacking with Tarmogoyfs than casting Dark Ritual, though.
Why is that?
I don't know. There's been so much combo actually having success that people are just playing a lot more hate. Like at the local event, I got like Isochron Scepter locked out with Orym's Chant. I ended up winning that game anyway, but just the fact that people are playing stuff like that is kind of annoying.
Well, man, guys, pick up Isochrone Scepters. They look at Bryce Maynard, and Medina thinks he's going to put a high tide on it.
It's true.
So how did you end up doing overall in these past 2 weeks, Bryce?
Well, at Boston, there was like a weird mishanded in match slip issue. So not counting that, like both weekends total, I only had like slightly above 50% match win, which is really terrible. But I'd also not played either deck in an extremely long time before playing them, so that has a lot to do with it.
So what do you plan to, what's your plan, what's your game plan for Providence? I'm assuming you're going, right?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely going. For anyone who hasn't booked, you should book soon, because it's the same weekend as some college's graduation ceremony thing. Heads up there. But my plan for Providence is just to keep testing all these, like, Force of Will brainstorm decks, really. Well, I mean, I guess that's a lot of decks, but just, I don't know, decks that can apply reasonable pressure but also control the game enough.
Do you think Mental Misstep is going to make people play more lands in their brainstorm decks?
Either more lands or more than one spell that draws cards. Maybe both. Like, maybe people will start playing Thirst for Knowledge or something. Probably not, because it costs 3 mana, but...
Oh, speaking of Mental Misstep, I was watching the SCG live, and Mr. Gerard Fabiano was one of the special hosts for this, for SCG Charlotte, and I think at one point he started to talk about Mental Misstep and thinks it might actually be overrated.
Well, it's definitely overrated, but it's also not good, if that makes sense.
I mean, I think it depends who you're talking to. Like, if people are like, oh my god, it's Force of Will, then yeah, that's overrating it, right? But yeah. Like, it's a powerful card, and it's gonna affect Legacy, definitely.
Mark?
Yeah, I think the best way to look at Mental Misstep, I know I haven't had a whole lot of chances to test it, but Arielax has done a really good article on Star City where he, you know, actually plugged Mental Misstep in the established decks right now. We're testing it, and the basic consensus that came out was that, you know, the non-blue decks, just because they gain the 4 Mental Missteps, doesn't improve their combo matchup by that much. You know, doesn't improve what they thought is problem matchups by that much. It actually helps the blue decks out a lot. Like, Merfolk, I think, stands to gain the most from it. I think the slots that you cut for Mental Misstep are going to be your day slots and maybe your Sculptor slots in your blue decks. At least that's what I'm going with right now. But I think that right now everyone is just going crazy over the card, and I think it's a little overrated for what people think. Like, it's not going to slice your bread, it's not going to make you breakfast, but it is going to help you when you play blue decks.
Which article were you referring to?
I can actually link you guys to it. Arielax just came out with an article. I think it was
Arielax. Okay.
Yeah, Arielax. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was a really good read. Basically, I shared a lot of his opinions with how Mental Misstep was going to be used. But it's on Star City's page. It's the third one in the premium column.
Okay. Because I know our boy Drew Leving is extremely excited about it. And he even wrote an article, and he's even talked to me. I told him that I'm pretty sure that I'm playing Merfolk of Providence, and he used absurdly powerful to me, that he thinks Merfolk is an absurdly powerful deck to be bringing, and definitely need to test it more. But I think Gerard was just talking about how Mental Misstep was a one-for-one spell, and he prefers spells that give him inherent card advantage. I think that was one of his arguments.
Well, I think the one thing about Mental Misstep is, like, if you don't draw in the early game, it's gonna be, like, in the non-blue decks, if you don't draw in the early game where you want to be protecting your threats and, you know, countering one drops, you may not like it as much. But, for the blue decks, at the very least, if you have cantrips, if you have Force of Will, you have a use for Mental Misstep in the late game. So, I think that's another way to look at the card in terms of plugging it into whatever deck you're gonna play it in.
Alex?
Well, basically, I agree. Like, the card's good, but it's not going to make you breakfast. Like, only Medina's mom does that. That's right, Medina. I know you're listening to this.
Man, even when he's not here, Alex is trolling Jonathan Medina.
Well, because I love him so much. Shout out to Jonathan Medina.
So Bryce, anything else you want to talk about? Like, how are you going to plan to prep with this?
With Metal Misstep?
My plan is just to go to the pre-release this weekend and hopefully trade for a bunch if I can.
Yeah. I mean, there's multiple stores around here that I can just pick them up at like 5 cents each or whatever, but.
What?
Yeah, the stores around here have terrible pricing. I can just get pretty much anything at whatever price I want.
So you want to pick me up some of these underground sea things?
That might be a little bit more difficult, but...
There's this card Black Lotus. Do they have those for 5 cents?
No.
Man, 5cents.com, that'd be a killer online card store.
Man, it's like going to the bank and giving them a $5 bill and being like, hey, could I have a $20 bill back, please?
5 cent cards. So, Bryce, I think you mentioned that you're just going to play a bunch of decks.
Is that your... Yeah, mostly just, I mean, as I said earlier, Force of Will brainstorm decks, but, I mean, that's probably what I'm going to be playing, so I'm just going to try out the different ones until I get one that I like.
Okay.
I feel a lot like you do, Bryce. I think that, like, I'm going to be trying a lot of decks. I'm very unsure about what I want to play.
Yeah.
But I definitely, like, in the past, I played a lot of, you know, Dark Ritual decks and High Tide and whatever. I like playing combo, but I just think... It's a bad time now to be playing combo with, first of all, a lot of people packing more hate, like you said. Plus, with Mental Misstep coming out, like, there's going to be even more people.
I think Mental Misstep might actually help combo, not that it would play Mental Misstep, but that people might start cutting their spell pierces for Mental Missteps. Because as someone that plays, like, Ant a lot, I'm not really that afraid of Mental Misstep. I'm much more afraid of, like, spell pierce or something.
Really? Because I actually... think that it's more scary because it counters your discard effects and like in Force of Will decks, for instance.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot better when they're targeting like your duresses and all that, but as far as like once you get to the point where you're comboing off or whatever, it's just you don't really worry about it as much.
I agree with that for sure.
Yeah.
In agreement on Crazy Talk.
It's crazy.
Well, Medina's not here. So, there's been some interesting decks from Charlotte that I maybe want to look at.
Sure,
most interesting one came 32nd. Everybody's laughing because they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of upset that they all did this before I could.
This is an Aggro Battle of Wits deck by Kenny Mayer, and it's got... One sort of body in mind. Okay, I'm not going to read the whole deck list, but it's got a fairly low curve. If you actually go on Star City and you look at their mana curve thing, it's just really funny because it goes way off the charts and like, you know, everything's below five. And like, you know, it's got four Nakatal, like every good aggressive, four Curd Ape, four Loam Lion, four Lotus Cobra. And of course, the only blue card as far as I can see besides like, you know, Progenitus. It's got four Battle of Wits. And I wasn't actually watching, but a friend of mine told me that this was in feature match against Show and Tell.
Yeah.
And the Show and Tell guy played Show and Tell, you know, to put in Emrakul or whatever. And he put in a Battle of Wits. And of course, that's just awesome.
He finished 32nd, though, so that's pretty impressive. How viable, like, from someone who's never been in Legacy too long, has this type of deck been viable at all?
Well, I guess I got to play the skeptic here and say no. But I do not think this deck is viable, but, I mean, it's like, awesome, and, like, you know, if you're up for, like, playing a joke, you know, and having a lot of time shuffling, then, like, it's, you know, why not play that? But I if I was trying to win a tournament, I certainly would not choose this deck.
Bryce?
You're not very vulnerable to brain freeze.
Mark?
What?
Any quick thoughts on this specific Battle of Wits deck or Battle Wits in the past? Has it ever seen any prominence?
I don't think I was actually playing when it was standard legal, but I got to play some games with Kenny Mayer actually on Saturday. We were just messing around, but I was seeing how his deck worked. But yeah, it plays really well. Battle of Wits is one of those like oops I win kind of things, but he never focused on that as the actual kill condition. I mean, he was casting Blood Red Elves, you know, whatever the entire day. So it looks definitely like a fun deck to play. I mean, if I had the cards, I would probably give it a shot.
But you said you would never play an EDH type deck again.
Well, this is, I don't know. I mean, if there's a promise of getting a Battle of Wits, I may reconsider.
Well, the deck's a bit different. Like, it's all about redundancy, right? Like, it's maybe 250 cards or whatever, but, like, it's got so many cards that do just the same thing. Like, you know, it's got so many one drops, you know, that are aggressive. It's got a whole bunch of good two drops. I mean, the thing is, like, the secondary ones are just, like, slightly below what the, you know, like, I'd rather cast a Tarmogoyf than a Plated Geopede, for instance, on turn two. But, I mean, you know, it's Geopede's probably still going to put a lot of hurt on your opponent if they don't have an answer. It's just it's slightly inferior, so. I mean, and Magic is a game of edges, right? Like, I think you give up an edge by playing this, though. I mean, it's just awesome, though. Just like my inner Timmy slash Johnny or whatever is just like jumping for joy seeing this deck list.
Dave, is this something you'd consider playing, being a more casual type player?
Probably not. I find it very entertaining. Like when you look at it from a certain perspective. Like, it has Natural Order as one edge, but also has Battle Wits as the other edge, so it's basically a zoo deck with, like, two big win conditions aside from just turning guys sideways. But otherwise, if my collection could encompass all these cards, then yeah, I'd definitely put it together and give it a run.
It looks fun, definitely. I mean, well, I can't really say that, because all Battle Wits decks obviously look fun.
I actually played Battle of Wits once when it was Type 2. It was a blast. I even played it in the once ever Two at a Giant Constructed tournament that was run at my local store. And so, like, it was really funny because Ravnica was out at the time, so, like, everybody, you know, was playing mill, planning to just, like, mill someone out. And so, like, my partner, I got him to have, like, four Ivory Masks in his deck and, like, a whole bunch of counter spells and stuff. And I had Battle of Wits. And they're like most of the other decks have like one counterspell deck and one mill deck. And it's like, good luck trying to mill me out, guys. And it was just so fun, like just playing a Battle of Wits with like, you know. But in Type 2, like the main problem with playing that deck is it's hard to shuffle. Like it's a perfect Magic Online deck because, you know, you don't, like shuffling 60 cards you already spent a bunch of time on, but now then you shuffle like, you know, 300 cards or whatever. It's a lot of time and effort. So if you guys decide to play that deck, I recommend bringing like an automatic shuffler.
Any other deck that catches your eye in the top list, Alex?
Well, AJ Sacker, of course, won with what is labeled blue, white, red control. And, again, just like before, it seems very similar to the deck he played the previous week.
Right.
In fact, possibly the exact same, maybe a few slots different. And again, it's just blue-red. There's no white. There's a tropical island for engineered explosives, but there is no white in his deck. So Star City, like, you know, you put a lot of money and time and effort into, like, these opens, and you can't label the winning decks properly. Something's wrong.
I think last week they also mislabeled the Reed Dukes deck as Bant instead of Rug or something.
Yeah, they definitely did. I mean, there was just Noble Hierarch I mentioned last week.
And so how good are you gonna be? Have you been planning to playtest this deck, Alex?
The deck definitely looks interesting. I was actually watching people play on Tuesday some Legacy at the local store, Fasafas. And one guy was playing Canadian Threshold, and there was like five people who independently came up to him and asked him why he was playing that instead of Aegis Sacker's deck. And he's like, I don't have Dreadnought. It's like, well, why don't you just buy one Dreadnought? Like, and the deck seems pretty sweet. I mean, Grim Lavamancer seems really well positioned right now. Like, there's all these people playing, you know, Merfolk and Goblins and so on.
I think every time Team America has a little uprising in the open metagame or whatever, I think Dreadnought will start coming back every time that happens because it just doesn't die to go for the throat. And it's so big.
That's what she said, but, yeah.
Mark, do you have any thoughts on this particular deck?
I was zoning out a little bit.
Hello?
I was zoning out just a little bit. But, are you talking about the Dreadnought deck?
Right.
That AJ was playing? I think it's going to have a problem beating the decks that have creatures with asses bigger than three. Like, I don't know. I just don't like the fact that it's only red-blue. But I do like the fact that he's not leaning on the Stifle-Knot strategy. Like, I've played Dreadnought before, and I've had a big problem with, like, you know, if you have Dreadnought Strand in your hand and you can't cast them out, I like it as a secondary recognition. But, that's really about all I have. Sorry, I'm trying to fix my email right now. It's just freaking out right now. I have it set up to where I redirect all of my email to my Gmail, and all the things from my university account are going into the spam box. I just cannot fix this right now. Sorry.
How many technical difficulties can an Asian guy have?
I'm supposed to be good at this sort of thing. Use your math skills.
Well, hey, I didn't think the headset problem would be an issue until, you know, I live with a bunch of guys at games, so somebody must have borrowed my headset. But, no, it's not that bad.
And someone must have hacked your email, too.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely like that the deck doesn't, like, lean on Dreadnought, like you said. Like, definitely being Dreadnought flooded without enough stifles was bad. And, like, you had to play Trickbind as well as Stifle, which is nowhere near as good. I really like the Trinket Mage package, like, being able to find Basilisk Caller to go with your Grim Lavamancers. It's pretty sweet.
Huh.
Yeah, I can get behind any deck playing Trinket Mage.
Though, seriously, should go for the old... I prefer the old artwork to the new one. What's your thoughts on that, Dave? You're the art master.
Which card?
Trinket Mage.
Oh, yeah, the old artwork, definitely.
Definitely.
That's my seal of approval.
Yay. Man, I feel so weird to be, like, you know, accepted by you guys. You know, you, like, agree with things I say.
Man, this is going to be interesting. Are we putting this in the gauntlet?
Oh, it definitely should be. I mean, he's topping twice in a row. Like, it won a Star City. People are going to notice.
People are just scooping him in, man. These are invalid results. I'm kidding.
Yeah, all 11 rounds.
You're AJ Soccer? You need to go to level 8 scoop. I don't even know you, but thanks.
Well, I mean, there's also the Team America deck, right, by Edgar Flores, which seems to go back from Dark Confident, which Jerry Teat tried to play, to Tombstalker, right? He's playing four Goy, four Tombstalkers as creature base.
Maybe he's playing some stuff out. Odds.
Maybe. I don't know. He's Edgar Flores, though. Like, his whole Cobblade deck is foil. You'd think he could be like, here, can I borrow four Bobs? Here's a foil Jace for collateral. I mean, you know, he needs to borrow someone's car, he can lend them a foil Jace.
So this is just going back to the original build, right?
Well, not quite the original build, but, I mean, more closer to what it used to be, with the Tombstalkers. So, I mean, and Stifles, which were for in the original build. Like, basically it means that people haven't decided yet what the right build is, because I believe there usually is a right build of a deck, at least for a metagame.
Bryce? Have you played with Team America a lot?
Team America was like one of the first not combo decks I ever built in Legacy.
America.
Yeah.
It's from Medina.
I prefer Dark Confidants. That's actually the version of the deck that won the GPT I was at. I like Tombstalker, but I also just like drawing cards, so.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of drawing cards too. And plus, like, I started playing around Ravnica, so Dark Confidant is one of my favorite cards.
Yeah. I don't like the Stifles very much anymore. I used to be a big fan, but they just, I don't know, they get less and less good over time. And then when Misstep comes out, they probably just get worse.
Yeah, like, I liked Stifles against weaker players generally who didn't play around them.
Yeah, that's the problem with it.
Yeah, like, as I started to play against better and better people, I liked Stifle less and less. And eventually it became like a card that you toss the Force of Will.
I'm really intrigued by the Metalworker deck, Alex, because when I first started Legacy, I think you and Joey were building this together or something. I don't remember, but playing testing something, a Metalworker deck against me and just like killing me in a very, with a Staff of Dominion combo. Domination combo,
yeah.
Rather. So, how viable was Legacy, and what do you think about this specific list by Ali Andrazi?
You mean how viable is the Metalworker deck? Anyways.
What did I say?
You said how viable is Legacy.
How viable is Legacy as a format?
That's terrible. No.
How viable is Metalworker?
I really don't know. I mean, I haven't actually played this version of the deck. There's a lot of differences from the version I tried before. I mean, it can be really explosive.
I always thought every time you play Metalworker against me, I'm like, this guy's insane.
Well, of course. I mean, the whole deck, right, like, reveals for this guy to tap for a whole infinite mana. Like, I mean, the deck could potentially kill turn two, right? If you go turn one Metalworker, turn two Staff, and then just, like, go nuts. Infinite mana, draw your deck, and then, like, you know, attack with metal.
You might even be able to just kill turn one if you have Lightning Greaves or something.
How though? Like, I don't. I guess. I mean, you probably need too many cards though. But maybe.
Probably. Yeah.
I mean, it's already like you already need like two cards at least. Usually three cards to get. Yeah, like three cards to get three mana on turn one, plus the Metalworker, plus the. Anyways, we're going to see a lot here. But yeah, the deck can be really explosive, and I mean, it just pumps out really big threats. Ali Atranzi seems to like this sort of deck, because I noticed in Type 2 he played like a Grand Architect deck before.
Right.
So he likes casting big artifacts. The deck looks fun. Like, I'm really not sure how great it is, but... It does look pretty fun and explosive. I mean, I can see you doing some pretty crazy things.
No. Say it right.
Oh, you're right, KYT. Some pretty crazy things.
I just remember playtesting against you, and Metalworker was just the scariest card for me. It's like, because I didn't know what was going on. You revealed, like, you're just like, reveal, slam, like, something big, and I'm like, what the fuck? And I died. So... Mark, do you have an experience with Metalworker decks?
Yeah, but mainly on the receiving end. I actually lost to Ali in his previous build in Atlanta. I'm familiar with Michael Baumholt. He's the guy that made the original Forge Master deck, I guess, that showed up at Indy.
Okay.
Michael shows up to our local tournaments a lot, so I get a chance to play around it or play against it. And he's made a lot of good innovations in that deck. But yeah, it's actually very similar to Enchantress in terms of mulliganing. If you don't hit an accelerate on turn one, you're going to be in trouble for the rest of the game. But, you know, if you get a turn one Metalworker though, and you can protect it, or if they don't have any removal for it, you're pretty much in the clear. So, I'm actually pretty scared of that deck. When I play against him and I know he's in the room, I generally just walk over to my binder and I'm like, there's a Kataki here, might as well slide that in the sideboard today. Slide the energy flux in there, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a powerful deck. It does a lot of unfair things, and it kind of reminds me of like it gives me that feeling of more towards like the vintage feel, you know, because if you're powering out Wurmple Engines on turn two and you put a lightning grease on it, it's kind of game over for your opponent.
That's like one of the more fair things you can do, right? I mean, you can Metalwork or Staff of Domination them, but there's also the other sort of combo. They're Forge Mastering out a Blightsteel Colossus when you have Lightning Greaves. Like, you just play Lightning Greaves, then you play Forge Master, sack three artifacts, get Colossus, equip it to the Greaves, attack them, and they die. Like,
yep. I do like this particular build, though, because I don't think he's... I don't think that Holly has played the Staff of Domination before in this deck, and I don't know if we can get any feedback on how the deck operated with it. But I do like the fact that he's playing blue now for Dotcast, so at least getting some of the card advantage back. Like, you know, I knew that he had a mulligan a lot throughout the day, so Dotcast must have helped him regain, you know, like, not mulligan as heavily if he found a Dotcast.
Yeah, I thought the Dotcast was definitely one of the more interesting additions.
Yeah. We haven't seen this... Has it ever appeared on SCG Top 8s? I think this might be the first time I've seen this.
There was another one I saw before, I think, that was playing red, right? It was playing...
Yeah, Weinberg beat it in the finals.
Yeah. That also...
That was against Michael Baumholt. So
yeah.
It was like the first ever iteration. Actually, the last time I saw him, I actually played at the GPT 2 weekends ago, and to metagame against High Tide, he was sighting in 4 Chains of Mephistopheles. And playing and black sources in his deck, so it was pretty crazy. He wound up beating.
Say it right.
What? Oh, it was pretty crazy. but he wound up beating 2 High Tide decks on the day, so he obviously did a pretty good job in choosing that card.
Wow, is this something to consider?
I wouldn't recommend it, but
why not? Why not? Metalworker.
Well, the problem I see with decks like this is that they're relatively inconsistent, right? Like,
yeah.
That's a mulliganing issue.
But
there's 2 days at a Grand Prix, so.
I like that's a nice way to put it, Bryce.
Yeah. I mean, you might get lucky one of the days, but not the other one.
Oh, but, like, man, Metalworker has to be one of my favorite cards in the format. Yeah,
it's just definitely cool.
Reveal. Bang! Like,
yeah, the best part is the look on your opponent's faces because you're revealing like their imminent demise. You're like, which way am I going to kill you, bro? Like,
so true. Yeah, well, like as we discussed, Alex, you mentioned a good point. Like me not liking affinity type decks anymore. I guess I'm probably not going to enjoy playing this if I did choose it for GP Providence.
Like, the other interesting thing about decks like this is that they sort of control themselves. Like, if they become too good, then just people just start siding Null Rods and they get completely hosed. Like, I don't see how this deck beats a Null Rod.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Well, I mean, I guess it hopes to get to, like, a whole bunch of tapping for 2 lands, like, no Seed of the Synods, and then plays Wurmcoil Engine and attacks a few times. But like,
yeah, I mean, you can also power out the early Lodestone Golem to apply pressure. Like, you can get a turn 1 Lodestone Golem, not easily, but it's very, like, you know, it's a reasonable mulligan, you know. So I don't think it'd be that scary. Like, if your opponent is going to be waiting on turn 2 to play Norod and you're on the play, I don't think you're that worried about Norod.
Fair enough. So, the other interesting deck, of course, in the top 8 is Drew Levin's deck, which Tezzeret Thopter Sword.
I thought it was our affinity list. He might have been inspired by the deck list I shipped him.
I don't think so. I think there's actually it was a deck tech on the deck, and it's someone else's deck that he took and started playing.
Yeah, sadly.
It's pretty much the deck Adam Barnello has been playing forever. I don't know who actually invented it, but he's the most vocal about it.
Mr. Channel Fireball, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, I think this is the David Gearhart one, right? Because it has Tezzerets.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
that's right.
The David Gearhart.
Yeah, okay.
Well, the deck looks pretty sweet. I mean, this is kind of a type of deck I love to play. Like, lots of, you know, it has tutors and lots of things to find and lots of tricks. I love tricks.
Yeah, Ensnaring Bridge is quickly becoming just one of my favorite cards in Legacy.
Yeah, so this deck's basically, it's a whole bunch of artifacts. It's got emphasis on the Thopter Foundry, sort of the meek combo with four foundries and three swords, which most decks you see with like two and one, right? Because, and with their Enlightened Tutors. But this deck seems to really, really max it out. And then, and then you got Brainstorm, Force of Will, like any deck that with fetch lands and blue plays. And then Swords to Plowshares, Enlightened Tutor, the only three tutors. A Humility and O-Ring. Mox Opals is the Mox of choice. And Jace
is Chromox too.
Yeah, there's two Chromox as well, sorry. And he does have enough colored non-artifact spells to support it. So I think the plan with this deck is to like set up a lock with Ensnaring Bridge or and Humility or whatever, and then Sword of the Meek Thopter them. Or just set up a Planeswalker. Planeswalkers are good, apparently.
I was birding actually one of Drew's games matches in Boston when he didn't do so well, and I think the game that kicked him out of contention was when this other guy, some control deck, I think, was able to resolve Blood Moon against him. And Drew had his Seal of Cleansing in hand and couldn't do anything, I think, from that point on. I don't know how popular is Blood Moon?
I don't know. A lot of decks seem to play it as like a one of in the sideboard.
I think the only decks that play it more than a one of is like Dragon Stompy.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And Dragon Stompy's not exactly a large proportion of the metagame.
No.
I consider yourself unlucky if you played it once every three tournaments.
Yeah.
So how do we... Are you going to sleeve this up, Alex?
I saw this deck in action. Joey, who you mentioned, a friend of mine, was playing this on Tuesday. And I believe he went 4-0. It looked pretty solid. So it's definitely one of the decks that I'm looking at. I don't know. I feel that maybe it has some consistency issues with... I really like having at least like one basic land in my mana base when I play a deck. This deck seems like the mana seems really greedy. Though I've seen greedier mana bases, of course.
Yeah.
Like I've seen a guy who played, you know, four color land still with like Volcanic Fallout in his sideboard with Cunning Wish for and like, you know, along with Wastelands and Mishra's Factories in his same deck. But I don't know, this deck definitely looks sweet, though it definitely not a deck you can just pick up and play. It definitely looks very complex.
Bryce?
I think my favorite addition that Drew added was the sideboarded Confidants, and then he moved the entire counterbalance package to the sideboard. Well, the counterbalances, and then he left the tops main. Most of the lists you see have like one or two counterbalances to Enlightened Tutor for a main deck, but he shipped them all to the side.
That is interesting.
Yeah, I really like the Bobs though, because before this specific list, I had never seen sided Bobs in this deck. Like a lot of decks do that, like and stuff like that, but I've never seen it in this deck, so he probably caught a lot of people off guard with that.
Can I side in Bobs in Infinity?
Why not?
You could. But what are you boarding them in against?
Everything. Because they're just fucking awesome. Just
then,
like.
Then why aren't they main deck, though?
Why aren't they main deck?
Well, in this deck, there's a reason, but in Infinity, I don't know. I think if you're playing them at all, you play them main if you're playing them in Affinity.
Hasn't ever been tried. I mean, Bob's such an awesome card.
I think it has been tried, in fact, by a list that Medina referred us to in one of the earlier episodes by Caleb Durward.
One of those Channel Fireball guys.
Yeah, well, the guy who created Blue-Green Vengevine Survival.
Right, right. And did he play Thopter combo in his Affinity build? Maybe.
I can't remember, but I don't think so. I don't think he was playing Bob Zen Thopter combo.
I think maybe just Thopter Fount. I forget. But why not? I just want to play Dark Confidence in all my decks now. Even in Cobblade. No, oh, if I could.
But you're playing Merfolk. You could play Merfolk with Dark Confidence. Come on.
Has that been done?
All your forces.
You're like, end of turn, files at 2, file in. They're like, yeah, Lord of Atlantis. You're like, no.
It's Dark Confidant. They're like, oh, shit.
They're like, what the fuck, Bob Maker? Where'd you come from? You're like, untap, reveal, another Dark Confidant.
Right, revealing forces and, I guess, Mirror Enforcers and Thought Casts. It's not that good, but our version doesn't play Mirror Enforcers anymore.
No, but I mean, even like I like when people say about Bob and high casting Gust cards, I always like to refer them to Antonio De Rosa's deck with 4 Greater Gargadons and and 4 hit and runs in type 2, and like, you know, Bob, that's how good the card is. Like, you just don't, you're just getting a body plus the card advantage for so cheap, it's worth the life that you're gonna take.
I've had a non-zero amount of cube decks with Emrakul and Bob.
Well, I know what happened to a friend of mine, Justin Richardson. He was playing a vintage deck with Bob's and Colossus plus Tinker, obviously. And Bob revealed the Colossus, and then he brainstormed it back in, fetched, and the next turn it revealed Colossus again. And he died. So I think he hates Bob, but everybody else, he should be playing more of that card.
What do you think, Mark? Can I put it in Affinity? I just want to go like Mox Opal, Artifact Land, you know, Ornithopter, play Bob, go.
I think the risk of, I mean, there have been lists that I've seen that play Bob, but I don't think they do very well. I think right now, like, I think like Bob was a good fit in Drew Levin's deck because no one expected it, but if people are going to bring in creature kill for your Bob anyways, I feel like it's not a great strategy. And also, you know, again, flipping the Enforcers in the Thought Cast, I don't know. I don't know how good of a time you'd have with that.
I don't know. Flipping a Thought Cast means I draw 2 extra cards on top of that. That's insane.
I think one of the problems with Bob is in these linear strategies like Affinity and Merfolk is that you really want to be drawing like another Merfolk or another artifact, and rather than like a card that's going to give you long-term advantage, you want something that's going to give you advantage like now. And put like Merfolk wants to put enough pressure on their opponent so they have like chance to play like 2 relevant spells maybe that they like daze or force respectively and then kill them. And Affinity wants to just like plop its hand on the table and say, what do you got, buddy?
And no rod.
Yeah, and then the Affinity deck loses if that's what they got. And they're just like, I have a Swords to Plowshares, and you're like, thanks for playing. I mean, neither deck really wants to be like, Bob, you know, oh, draw something, trade for you, with you, 1-for-1, trade with you, like, both decks don't really have like a way to interact with what your opponent is doing, just other than like, you know, force of will. It's really like if someone resolves a spell against Merfolk, like that thing's staying in play. So you just like getting extra cards off Bob is not as important as having an onboard advantage, I think.
Oh,
or maybe
Mark,
I'm wrong.
Mark, do you have any final thoughts on the Drew Leving deck?
I think right now if you're going to be playing like Enlightened Tutor Control, I think this is probably the list that you're going to go with.
Okay.
And you know, this is definitely, you know, this is obviously an updated version of David Gearhart's deck, but you know, Drew put a lot of, I think he put a lot of good principles in this deck, like the counterbalance on the side and the bobs on the side. He's got a lot of really good silver bullets right now for the metagame, so I would definitely look into playing this deck a lot more.
All right. So before we wrap out, I guess we're going to each, before you give your shout-outs, tell us what deck you currently plan to bring, if you have any. So we'll start with you, Mark.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess my, I don't know. I don't really have any shout-outs, I guess. Like a shout-out to Medina, because he was here tonight. But
damn, you stole my idea.
If I had to bring a deck, I'm definitely going to be thinking about testing either American Thresh, which is one of the decks that got a deck for Charlotte. Mm-hmm. My friend Ryan Rowland made the deck, and it looks really, really solid, and I think that it probably, you know, like all the blue decks, it probably gets more powerful with Metal Misstep. Has a lot of good elements. It's not green, so it doesn't have the usual weaknesses to, you know, submerges and perishes. So it looks like a deck that I want to test. If all else fails, I'll probably be bringing Merfolk to DP Province.
Damn, if that's everybody's Audible deck.
And I don't like the name of that deck. Canadian Threshold all the way.
Mark, definitely. I just hope that if you scrub out from GP Providence, you don't kill yourself. Remember your sunglasses, though, so no one knows.
Yeah, I'll have. If I get to like, you know, if I get to like 7-0, I'll probably take the sunglasses off. But you know, for the most part, I'll have the sunglasses on.
Yeah, I mean, they're glasses named after you, right?
The Mark glasses, man. Come on.
7-0, take them off. Oh my God, it's Mark's son.
You gotta be there too. You gotta be there to point me out. You gotta be like, oh my God, who's that?
The legacy legend is back.
Yeah, we need to get like someone to come and be like, can you take my picture with you? And, like, you know, get some girls to come and like, can you sign our breasts? And like,
Bryce, shout outs. And I think you already mentioned what you're still gonna test a bunch of decks.
Yeah, I mean, if Providence were tomorrow, like with New Phyrexia legal, I would either be playing Merfolk or Team America or like a last minute switch to AJ's deck, even though I haven't played it enough yet.
Sounds good. Any shout outs?
Are we doing those now?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely no one.
Absolutely no one.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Not even Medina.
That's a really less strange Medina. Name for a person. Absolutely no one.
Well, this episode's called Less Medina, so that's good. Alex.
In what deck I'm gonna play, I don't know. Like, if you guys have been listening to the cast regularly, you'll realize I'm very flip-floppy about choosing a deck, and that's one of my definitely a weakness of mine, that I, like, don't stick with the same deck long enough and just practice, like Alex Bertoncini, you know?
That guy's crazy.
Yeah, that's what KYT wants to be like him. He's like, I'm gonna get my hair all done like that. And I'm gonna, you know, shuffle my cards in my hand like him. I'm gonna watch all the replays. I'm gonna become Alex Bertoncini. That's the only way I can win GP Providence. No, but I don't know. I'm again gonna just try a bunch of decks and see what cards are I have available. Though probably, like, I have enough generous friends that I probably can play whatever I want. But in terms of shout out to Medina, who's absent today, and Frankie, who's also absent. Frank, you know, for you, Frankie, you know, I'll go to my gas station and buy some gas. that's basically it.
Okay, sounds good. Dave, I hope we've been educational to you. I mean, I hope to get you on the A-Team podcast for sure when we do a special Commander cast. Won't be this week because, you know, we want to be doing our new Phyrexia pre-release cast. But I hope we brought something and maybe got you more interested in Legacy.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've always been very interested in Legacy and, like, following the new decks and all the tech that comes out of the recent tournaments. Like, my only deck pretty much is, like, Mono Blue Merfolk, so I'm not really creative there.
But everybody's gonna play this shit.
But yeah, like, I just got my last Savannahs in the mail for my green-white order deck, although I don't think it'll be that good at the moment. I think it'll be really fun to play. But yeah, just like sitting here, listening to you guys talk about all the new decks has been really educational, and hopefully if I come back again, I'll have a little more input to provide, a little more experience under my belt.
And play Enchantress, whatever you do.
Yeah, don't let us down like the other Asian guy.
Oh, that's not true.
No, he knows I love him. Any quick shout outs that you want to Well, obviously we're going to plug out your Dirtling Around comic available every Friday on MatterDeprived.com.
Yeah, definitely check that out. It's awesome, guys.
And if you didn't know, the little illustration for the Crazy Talk cast is
thank you.
Done by me. You're welcome. My pleasure.
Also, the A-Team logo. All of the cool stuff. All the cool stuff is done by Dave. Let's put it that way.
Not all the cool stuff, but a lot of the cool stuff.
So any one person you'd like to give a shout out to this week?
One person? Oh, I'm putting mine on the spot here. I don't know. Just for the short term, just got to give a shout out to the chief, KYT.
Thank you. So me, of course, I don't know. I'm starting to doubt if I'm going to be playing Merfolk. As Mark pointed out, that Glenn posted an article and Merfolk was the only one pushing over 10%. And I do imagine it'll be one of the more popular archetypes, Merfolk plus mental missteps. But being one to no longer fear mirror matches in standard, like with all the claw blades, but Legacy is definitely different. I totally still feel like I'm terribly outmatched. So, but Merfolk is the way to go. As of now, if it was tomorrow. Shoutouts, the usual face-to-face games for helping me out all the time at events, and I expect them to help me out again. And special shout-out to Bryce's friend, Joel Parody, if I pronounce. Man, I love that guy. When you're talking about playing someone, I mean, we were X1-1 maybe, and it was still going to be a serious game at SCG Boston. I didn't mention the shout-out. And I was playing Cobblade, he was playing Sparkblade, and he was just one of those guys that are really, really cool to play with. Like, he's very enthusiastic, very happy, like, he's like, this is just a regular match type of feel. And he was so happy, actually, in turn 3 or 4, he actually said, you know, go. Like, he actually passed a turn without playing a land. And then he changed from his awesome demeanor to calling himself many names, or like, I'm such a fucking idiot or something. And then I'm like, uh-oh, maybe he's transforming to an evil guy. But throughout, he was just chill. He was just laughing and then joking about how stupid he was for passing turn. But, you know, I've done stupid things in the past. I was even... I think Alex knows me as someone like too nice. I might have even let him take his turn and play his land, but, you know, not going to be that nice when I was so close to X1-1, and, you know, people were going to be cutthroat with me anyways. But I've mana leaked a spell pierce before, so definitely don't think it's that embarrassing, but it was just pretty funny, his reactions, like, fuck, like, he just kept talking about it, and then he's like, and I have 5 lands in hand or something. Definitely added to the combi factor. Bryce, you had one more shout out before we end the show.
Yeah, shout out to the Bruins for beating the Habs.
Damn.
Ooh, ouch. Ouch.
They're beating Philly too.
Yeah. Oh.
Ouch. But that's another shout out for me. Shout out to the conservative government for winning 39% of the vote and getting a majority. Good job, guys.
Shout outs to Jack Layden for finishing second. I know Frank was very high on him for the selection.
Quebec, pretty much Quebec voted like a lot of for NDP for his party. For any of you who follow politics, Canadian politics.
It's a hobby of mine.
And I just have to end this episode with condolences to Drew Levin, because he gave me condolences when the Habs lost in Game 7 to Boston. He's actually a huge hockey fan. And it's sad to see that his Washington Capitals just got swept by the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-0. That was not expected at all. And Drew, I'm sorry, and better luck next year. And I'm assuming they're going to fire the coach or whatever. But my heart's out to you, buddy. And with that, any last words?
Kingo.
I knew it! Bye, guys.